From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
Welcome to the National Press Club's Update One podcast. I'm Gemma Puglisi with the club's broadcast committee. Today, the topic is something close to all of us here at the Press Club, the state of our field, the news. Recently, CBS announced that they would be shutting down their long-running radio news programming after nearly 100 years. The announcement sadly shocked all of us. The network cited tough economic times, as well as audiences that are shifting to digital services and podcasts. CBS News Radio shut down on May 22nd, and it started back in 1927 and transformed our world with extraordinary reports, including the legendary CBS reporter Edward R. Murrow, who broadcast during World War II from a rooftop in London while Nazis were bombing the city. And before that CBS announcement, there were other casualties, including Voice of America. It had to shut down their operations back in March of 2025 following an executive order by President Trump. The president dismantled the U.S. Agency for Global Media, the parent company of VOA, citing government waste and wanting to strip federally funded news organizations. Nearly 85% of the workforce was placed in administrative leave. VOA started during World War II to counter Nazi propaganda and to serve the people with accurate news and information. But there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Shortly after the announcement, a district court judge issued that the International Broadcasting Organization must go back on the air. According to a BBC report, the federal judge described the decision to sack the journalists as arbitrary and capricious, adding that the government had not taken into account legislation that determines what languages and regions the VOA must serve. CBS News Radio provided material to an estimated 700 stations across the country and was best known for its top-of-the-hour news roundup. How could this all happen? Why did it happen? And are we seeing the demise of radio news? Here to talk about all of this and what it means is Michael Harrison, the publisher of Talkers, a trade publication for radio talk shows, which he launched in 1990. He has over 60 years of broadcast experience and is considered one of the most influential radio broadcasters today. He was appointed by the United Nations to serve in UNESCO's Executive Advisor to World Radio Day 2024. He has hosted and produced national radio programs syndicated by ABC Radio News, Westwood One, CBS Radio, RKO Radio, Talk Media Network, and more. He served as the first managing editor of Radio Records during its formative years in the 1970s and radio columnist, record chart consultant for Billboard in the early 1980s. I love Billboard. He was one of the first media analysts to predict the rise of podcasting before the term was widely known, as well as program director of the first radio station to have its own website. And Talkers, welcome. Welcome, Michael. Boy, I'm exhausted. That's a great amount there, to say the least. Thank you for being here today.
What a pleasure to be here. It's an honor. Thank you for having me, Gemma.
Sure. So in Talkers, there was a commentary from consultant Howland Cook, who said, "The future of radio isn't radio, it's reach." What's your take on that? What does that all mean?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what he meant by reach, but maybe it means being available on all the different platforms that are now iconic. In other words, back in the 20th century, different media were limited to specific platforms. If you wanted to see a movie, you went to the movie theater, it was a film. If television, you know, were the Emmys, the Oscars were movies, and the Grammys were records. And if you made a record, it was on a vinyl. And if you wanted to read a newspaper, it came to your front porch. It's all gone. And one of the interesting things about it is that each of those art forms, if you go back, I mean, you're an educator, so you're familiar with the works of Marshall McLuhan, The Medium is the Message. When the medium is no longer a distinct medium that is indigenous to a particular art form, well, then a certain amount of the art disappears. The art of radio, the art of putting together a newspaper, the art of making a full-length film and having it in theaters, they all had their own aspects in terms of the way in which they were performed and executed. The theater of the mind, Edward R. Murrow, this is London. And you hear the bombs in the background. You know, how cinematic, how amazing. So I think what Holland Cook is saying is that radio no longer is AM and FM in a radio set, a radio appliance, but rather it's an aesthetic. What is radio? Because it no longer is indigenous only to that one platform. And reach is what he was talking about, I assume.
Right.
And that has changed the art form, and it's changed our culture to a great degree, this new media environment that we're getting deeper and deeper into.
I do want to say one thing. You were talking about vinyl. Vinyl's back, though. I'm thrilled about that, to see a lot of people. Well, to an extent. Really. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, vinyl shops popping up here and there. But thank you. But you're absolutely right. What we know it as the art form has kind of is
yeah, vinyl is done. Vinyl is now a collector's item. Sometimes, right. You know, people play with statistics. They'll say, do you realize that vinyl is outselling CDs? But there's a reason for that. CDs are obsolete.
Right, exactly.
But there is now a division of the consumership of media that are into vinyl specifically. So there's vinyl being sold. But it's not an accurate depiction of the stats.
You're right. So we're talking about CBS, right, after almost 100 years. When you heard the news, right, because you've been in the industry for so long, first of all, what came to your mind when you heard about it? And secondly, did you see it coming?
I definitely saw it coming. I didn't expect it to come that day or that week. These things always come, or usually come faster than we expect them. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with that. I'm not surprised. I mean, radio was going through transition. And CBS News is not the same CBS News that was here 100 years ago, or that was the platform Edward R. Murrow was on. The ownership has evolved. The commitment to the art form, journalism has changed. So it's not that CBS News is without its detractors and was a giant mountaintop. It was largely a legacy, and it doesn't surprise me at all. It saddens me because it did provide a great service to radio stations that are strapped for cash, that don't necessarily have the ability to have a news department. And
right.
Most of the network news that's available now is biased toward the target audiences that radio goes after, just as most media is biased toward target audiences, as opposed to Edward R. Murrow. He put out the truth as he saw it and let the audience find him. Now, media targets audiences based on, you know, the Daily Dance of Affirmation. We'll tell you what you want to hear and you'll feel good about it. And so much has changed. So there aren't that many news operations available for radio stations in terms of networks, you know, in the top of the hour iconic newscast that CBS attempted to provide. A lot of people on the right said that CBS was left. A lot of people on the left said CBS is right.
Right.
So it's very hard to please everybody when you're in a polarized world, and we're living in a polarized world. But now, radio stations that depended on at least an attempt at objectivity were very disappointed because there aren't that many really good news organizations that make an attempt at being objective.
Where are people getting their news? I mean, I worked in news for many years, and I still listen to the news. But that's because I was in the industry and I appreciate looking at broadcast news and listening to radio. But I also have my apps and I get all these news organizations, and I get a pretty wide spectrum of what's happening in the world by looking at all these different outlets. But you're the one who kind of is the guru of this. Where do you think people are getting their news?
People are getting their news from a whole bunch of places. That goes back to the conversation about reach. And also, it's very demographic sensitive. Young people really get most of their news from social media. And when you think about that, those of us who understand the principles of journalism, the pride, the responsibility.
The responsibility. There you go. The responsibility
of journalism are appalled by that. You know, you're getting your news from your friend. You're getting the news from somebody who's biased. You're getting the news from places that those of us who've been around a while realize are not vetted and not as valid as they could or should be. So young people get it from social media. Older folks, as you mentioned, get it from their apps. There are many, many news organizations out there. There are more news organizations out there now than there were before. They just aren't as universally accepted or intellectually comfortable as they're not as safe as we thought. The CBS, ABCs, NBCs, New York Times, Wall Street Journals, Washington Posts, that type of thing of yesteryear. And maybe we were fooling ourselves. Maybe Walter Cronkite was biased. We talk about everybody trusted him and all that. Right. Maybe we're looking at it glorified. And I think about that all the time. I'm not suggesting an answer to that question, but I do wonder about that. I wonder about my own sensibilities. When you look at the old days, we tend to glamorize it.
Right, exactly. Right.
You know, maybe we were
the most trusted man. The most trusted man.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So it gives us a lot to think about.
It's interesting because you were talking about social media and how people get their news from social media. When we heard about Lindsey Graham passing away, I thought it was a rumor, and I'm going through my phone to make sure, because I have seen in social media where they have certain people have died, like this celebrity died and that celebrity died. And I'm like, wait a minute, is this true that this person passed away? And then I realized they said, you know, and then I'm looking through all of this and they're saying, no, this person hasn't passed away. Their social media is flooded saying they have. So when I heard about Graham passing away, I stopped and thought, no, this is a rumor. It is not true. Then I got the NBC, the CNN, the Wall Street Journal,
it was corroborated.
The New York Times,
it was corroborated.
Confirming.
Right.
And they were saying that. They were like, they are confirming, you know, CNN is confirming. So-and-so is confirming. And I totally agree what you're saying is just, you know, are people getting the right information?
Or getting accurate information.
Getting accurate information.
My immediate reaction to the first time I witnessed on my screen, because I'm always plugged into a screen, I'm plugged into audio, screens and audio. My first reaction was that it was clickbait, that it was not.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a ton of clickbait out there about celebrities dying. All they care about is the click, and they don't have any concern for truth or reputation. It's just about that. So that was my first impression. And then, of course, just as you described, the information started to come in, and you reach a point of saturation if you're an intelligent person where you go, okay, it's real enough. CBS, MS Now, you know, all of Fox, all of the different platforms are concurring that it happened, and you reach a certain point of saturation where you instinctively believe it's true.
Right.
We're not sure. We don't know what to believe at first.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're talking about, sadly, the end of CBS Radio News as we know it. But now we're talking about what the big trends are. And I think that's interesting that you kind of predicted podcasting a while back. That is huge. Podcasts are huge. People have their favorite podcasts. And I just wanted to, you know, I want your thoughts on this. Like, why do you think we're seeing this huge boom and this issue on podcasting that's long and people are just so tuned in? What's your take on all this?
Because there are so many good podcasts. There are also even more bad podcasts. For every good podcast, there could be 10, 20, or 100. I haven't, you know, studied the stats yet, but there are far more terrible podcasts than there are good ones. But the democratization of media that the digital age has brought to us is playing out really, you know, in full glory in the podcast world. And let's, you know, when I first discovered this thing called podcasting, it wasn't even called podcasting.
Right.
I used to call it stickless. In the radio business, the word stick is an old expression for the traditional radio station, the transmitter tower, the the building and the license, and that was called a stick. So WABC is a big 50,000 watt stick. And, and so I called it, because I'm in a world full of media people, I said, there's a stickless form of broadcasting on the horizon. What does that mean? That means you can broadcast anywhere in the world without a license and without expensive equipment. I remember saying,
it's incredible.
This
it's
is better
incredible.
than sliced bread, you know, and it's going to be the end someday. We're not there yet because there's so much money invested in the stick. We're going to eventually be at the point where there is no more 20th century based media. I believe Hollywood is dead. I believe that the whole notion of a big industry out in California with giant studios and resources to be able to make movies, you know, that are spectacular. Remember the big spectacular, you know, films of the 60s and the 70s?
Well, Odyssey's coming out, and that's been spectacular. There's a lot of buzz about that one, Odyssey. But we're not seeing as many. I know exactly what you're saying.
A case could be made that that movie could eventually be made on somebody's smartphone. That's the point. You don't need 100,000 extras. You don't need to rebuild ancient Egypt in the desert and have real pyramids. It's so much easier now to be able to create stuff. And now a lot of people, of course, are saying, well, it doesn't have the heart. It doesn't have the soul. It doesn't have the same feeling. I beg to differ with that. It's going to be better. And we'd better get used to the idea that we are entering an absolutely new paradigm when it comes to media and production.
It is true. And you kind of answered my question is, where do you think we're headed? And you kind of did say that where you think we might be. What do you project? You kind of did a little bit, but where do you think we'll be? I was going to say in 10 years, but that's too far away. I would say like in 5 years, we'll continue to see more podcasts, right? But you kind of alluded to it a little bit of where we're headed, but and that we might not see news and we may not see networks anymore and the investment in networks. And, you know, is it going to be everybody just skinning it on social media? Where will the networks be in 5 years? Will they still be around?
It all depends upon the economics of it and monopolies. It all depends upon whether or not all of the media, all of the major platforms, big tech, AI, all of these concepts that we deal with today that have replaced the NBCs and the CBSs and the ABCs of the old days, it depends on who's going to have ownership of them. It's going to depend on how things are regulated. It's going to depend upon the distribution of wealth within the media industry. That is going to be the determining factor, whether or not we really will have a truly democratized universe of platforms, or will all of them eventually be under control of the same handful of companies and billionaires. That's the crossroads that we're facing today. But we're never going back to the 20th century, never going back.
You know what? And that will end on that note. Michael, thank you so much. My thanks to Michael Harrison, the publisher of Talkers, for being with us today and for this important conversation. I also like to thank my colleagues here at the National Press Club for their help with this podcast, Mike Hempen and Adam Cano. From all of us at the Press Club, I'm Gemma Puglisi. Thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.